Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to Thoughts on E-Learning. Today we're going to talk about articles that have caught the corgi's eye. The corgi roams around journals and online repositories of articles and journals and monographs and drags back a few, reads them, and then provides a summary. So each week we put together three, and we try to make them kind of not follow any particular area of interest, but to appeal to readers because they might be thought-provoking or practical or just sort of expand your mind a bit. So let's pull out the three for this week and let's see what the corgi has brought us. So the first article is entitled, "Can Cognitive Load Approach Make Instructional Animations More Effective?" So essentially we're talking about the cognitive load approach, and it's a review of seven different empirical studies that have to do with different aspects of online learning. So this is by Ayers and Paas. This article looks closely at seven different empirical studies that focused on the use of instructional animations. The goal was to see if some of the theories used in determining how and where to use animations effectively, such as the cognitive load theory, did in fact result in achieving learning outcomes. After carefully reviewing the results of empirical research, Ayers and Paas developed guiding principles for designing effective instructional materials using animations. Ayers and Paas developed nine guiding principles, all of which are extremely clear and easy to implement. The first three are as follows. 1. Animations will be more effective if they are segmented into smaller sections. 2. Animations will be more effective if the learner has control over the presentation. 3. Animations will be more effective if key information is cued or signaled. So that's just three of them. I don't want to spoil the surprise, so please look up the article itself and read all nine. The article also addresses what Ayers and Paas perceived as fairly serious issues in the research design and pointed out the measure of animation efficacy was not always directly measured by looking at recall and performance on standardized tests. Further, if the animation effectiveness is measured by results on tests or other performative measures, conclusions may be faulty. The research design must also take into consideration that individual learning styles and preferences are important, as well as the kind of interactivity that is incorporated with the animations. So that's the first one. And I have to say, I totally enjoyed that article. Okay, the second article is entitled "Quantitative Risk-Based Analysis for Military Counterterrorism Systems." It's from Systems Engineering. It's by Kajowski and Miller. So, you've made a significant investment in your online and distance learning program. Now, what happens if something catastrophic befalls it? Do you know where your vulnerabilities are? Have you prioritized them and come up with a plan to minimize your risk? You would not drive your car without liability and collision insurance, would you? So what might happen if your server crashes, data is corrupted, or confidential information is compromised? You might be surprised how many programs do not have a coherent plan, or they have failed to identify and prioritize risk. Needless to say, they do not have an effective plan for dealing with equipment failures, problems with data, catastrophic failures, or even day-to-day operational problems. This highly technical paper may not seem to have much to do with e-learning, mobile learning, or distributed education. Basically speaking, the paper has to do with how one determines where there are vulnerabilities in the system, the likelihood of failure, and how best to protect oneself or shield oneself from risk. It's a case for analyzing the pros and cons of outsourcing key services and functioning, functions and for building in redundancies in the system. Case in point, how many colleges and universities have found themselves essentially abandoned by the company who sold them a software program but did not provide adequate support? And how many colleges decided to outsource one or more functions to find they have little or no control over quality of service? This article does not address the e-learning per se, but the concepts definitely apply. For example, a 9-step decision tree for looking at vulnerabilities makes sense for educational providers, colleges, universities, all kinds of e-learning programs. So, first, we can look at the different things. I'm kind of distracted here because I'm thinking again about how useful the approach is and how useful it is to take a systems approach to borrow from other disciplines when we're looking at the actual program itself. So in this case, this is a 9-step decision tree that's used for identifying potential military issues for, you know, terrorist threats. Well, let's think about it, how it might apply. One, identify critical assets for potential targets. Two, analyze vulnerabilities. Three, characterize the adversaries. Four, define a set of distinct threats. Five, analyze the design basis threat set. Determine the conditional probabilities of successful attacks. So I'm not going to go on too much because I'd like you to read the actual article. But I would like to just go ahead and just say that this is a technical article and much of the information may not be immediately usable for the average reader. However, the approach to threat and risk analysis and preparedness is extremely useful for today's e-learning programs. And by that I mean also mobile learning. Okay, our final corgi catch is a chapter from New Directions for Adult and Continuing Education. And it is by S.J. Levine, and the chapter is entitled The Online Discussion Board. So the purpose of this chapter is to explain just how discussion boards have the unique capacity to support higher constructivist learning and the development of a learning community. 10 conditions that support the effective use of online discussions are just detailed in this chapter. The findings detailed in the chapter are not unique, but they are useful for individuals developing and assessing distance programs, particularly as the way in which students access collaborative learning tools, including discussion boards, expands to include smartphones and other mobile devices. So let's just look at some of the conditions. Condition one, the social climate must be supportive. It has to be a climate conducive to learning. Levine points to Knowles' ideas on andragogy and learning. Condition two, introductions should be made. According to Levine, if one does not include a meaningful introduction and does not set out the rules for interaction, there can be problems as learners fail to interact in a purposeful manner. Condition three, a guide must be involved and the discussions should include meaningful feedback by the instructor or guide. The remaining 7 guidelines are very timely and useful. Some may seem a bit obvious, but they do reinforce current practices and principles. So I'm delighted that you're listening to the Corgi Catches, and this is for September 10th, 2007. Each week will be updated, so come back next week and also be sure to look at the past Corgi Catches. Thank you for listening. This is Susan Smith-Nash, Thoughts on E-Learning.